The Fallen State is amazing. Subscribe now.
Like Natty going north, Natty going north, running around like Natty going north. It's too amazing to see it, folks. Insane people screaming and yelling like Natty going north.
Welcome to The Fallen State. I am Jesse Lee Peterson. Today we have a debate on guns and the Second Amendment. I'm really excited to have with me Destiny, a Twitch streamer, a gamer, a YouTube personality. And on my left, Vince is back. Vince James of the Red Elephant. Do you guys know each other?
I think we've talked before briefly, yeah.
Yeah, oh, yeah? I think briefly on someone's stream, yeah.
Oh, yeah? You like him?
Not really, no.
What do you dislike about him?
I guess we'll get into that today over the gun stuff.
Huh? Amazing. And so both of you have been on my radio show. It's the first time you've been on The Fallen State. So do you believe that human beings are in a fallen state?
Not necessarily, no.
No, you don't believe that? How about you?
I would say, yeah. I'd say some.
And what does that mean to be in a fallen state?
To me, and I know you've explained this to me before, and I forget your exact definition, but right. To me, in a fallen state, I guess in the regard that you're putting it in, would be like a fallen spiritual state.
Why you don't believe human beings are in a fallen state? They act so weird.
I mean, weird is subjective. I think we're in an era of unprecedented access to technology, wealth, opportunity, education, like all across the world in levels we've never seen before. Global conflict seems to be at like a historical low. There's a relative stability around the world. We definitely have problems, but I wouldn't say we're anywhere close to a fallen state, not compared to where we've come from.
Amazing. You are a gamer, right?
Sometimes, yeah.
So does that mean you sit around and play games?
Sometimes, yeah.
How old are you?
30 years old.
That's amazing.
Thanks.
You're never going to get a woman playing games.
Aren't you still not married?
Right.
Okay.
But I have women already, though.
I mean, I don't know if this is relevant to the discussion, but...
But I'm just warning you, you're getting old sitting there playing games. They're passing you by.
I'm doing okay. Oh. I appreciate the concern, though, Jesse.
Okay. Well, if I find one, I'll let them know to knock on your door.
Any woman that you would find, I don't think I would want at my door, Jesse.
Let's get into the debates about guns and the Second Amendment, all right? What's your stance on gun control?
I think that there are problems with access to firearms in the U.S. today, and I think there are a couple of pretty simple changes that we could make to U.S. policy to kind of alleviate some of the problems we have with deaths related to firearms in the U.S. today.
Can you give me an example of problems with guns today?
People killing themselves, people killing other people, people dying accidentally, children killing themselves with firearms, stuff like that.
Is it the gun fault?
The gun is like a force amplifier.
What do you mean?
So somebody might have a bad idea or an inclination to do something bad, and a firearm gives you the ability to do more bad than you would otherwise. For instance, if I wanted to go on a killing spree with a knife, I'm probably not going to be able to kill as many people as I could with a handgun or a rifle.
That's amazing. What do you say to that?
It's interesting because the gun that they're talking about banning the most is the AR-15, and it only kills about 30 people a year. Well, the people with AR-15s only kill about 30 people a year versus what he mentioned, knives and hammers kill many more people per year, according to the FBI. So, I don't know. It's interesting that the gun that kills the least amount of people is the one that they want to ban, but I think that there's more nefarious reasons for that, in my opinion.
How do you respond to that?
Yeah, it's absolutely true. Rifles don't kill very many people in the year compared to other types of violence. Some of the most exaggerated violent events tend to happen with rifles, like the Las Vegas shooting, for instance. But, I mean, there are plenty of school shootings. I think the Virginia Tech shooter, I want to say, used handguns.
Right.
Handguns, though, are typically they're definitely by far the most deadly firearm for shootings around the U.S.
Have you ever owned a gun?
Yeah, I have a Glock 17 and a Mosin.
And have you shot it before?
Yeah, of course.
You're not afraid of guns, right?
No, definitely.
Oh, okay. And you would never just get up, because if you didn't touch your gun, it would never shoot anyone or anything, right?
That's not necessarily true.
Your gun would shoot someone on its own?
Not on its own, but somebody could find the gun. Somebody could break into your house and use the gun. A child could find the gun. I mean,
that's amazing, but they can also find a knife. You have knives at home?
They could, but accidentally shooting yourself with a knife or accidentally killing yourself with a knife is probably a lot more difficult to do than with a firearm you found.
Amazing. Do you own a gun?
Yes.
Have you ever shot a gun?
Yes.
And are you afraid of them?
No.
Why do they blame the gun rather than the people?
I think people in general, human beings, are always looking for something to blame something on, right? Because they can't necessarily explain evil, right? They can't explain something as crazy as someone walking into a school and shooting young innocent children. So humans, I think, inherently want to try to find something to blame. And we're seeing the same exact problem in London right now. So London has banned handguns, the UK in its entirety, pretty much for the most part. It's very difficult to obtain a firearm legally in the city of London. However, they're now putting metal detectors in schools to detect knives because people are killing each other with knives over there. They're talking about banning tipped knives. Doctors are calling for knife amnesty programs over there. And they even have knife turn-in bins on the street in the city of London. The Met Police Department just did a study, a gang study, and they're trying to get rid of that study because Sadiq Khan, the mayor, called that study racist because it determined that the majority of the gang violence, the majority of the stabbings, is perpetrated by black teens, and the victims are black teens. So they have a big knife problem there. They just surpassed the murder rate of New York City recently, and New York City has 900,000 legally owned guns compared to London, which has, you know, nearly zero. It's negligible, the amount of legally owned guns that London has. So it's a difficult situation, but we can get into it, certainly.
How do you respond?
I don't know how to deal with concepts of evil. I don't think we can, like, legislate against making people not evil. I don't know if I necessarily believe that people kill themselves or kill other people because they're evil. It seems like this is usually pretty predictable based on a set of circumstances related to their environment, whether you have one parent in the household, whether you have access to drugs, depending on where you live, the type of education, your socioeconomic class. There's a lot of different factors that will impact whether or not you have the proclivity to kill somebody. I guess it's possible. I notice it's kind of like your theme is to always go back to like demographics and gang violence. I don't know what the
statistics show that's true.
Sure, I don't know what the prescription there is. Like, what is the suggestion then? I'm curious.
On what to do?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, for instance, Sadiq Khan in London is reinstituting the stop and frisk that he called racist previously. So he's trying to do whatever. I mean, he's trying to go and get knives off. I mean, they're having people going to schools in London. They have this hashtag knife free campaign in London where they're putting it all over the media. They're having people go to schools and visit people and tell young children why it's dangerous to bring knives to school. So London is the perfect example because it just tells me that it's not the tool that the person uses to kill someone or perpetrate harm. It's the person, and it's the people. It's Sadiq Khan's going into the cities and literally stopping gang members and taking knives away from them or machetes and things like that. I mean, you would concede that it's mostly gang members who perpetrate gun violence in the country, correct?
Yeah, that seems to be the case.
Okay,
in the United
States.
Okay,
so I mean, if it's and with mostly illegally obtained firearms purchased on the street, you would concede that as well.
That's
correct?
Not true. No, I don't believe so.
Well, even Michael Bloomberg would say that. Even Joe Scarborough has said that over 90% of all shootings of all crime guns in the U.S. and he's quoting statistics are illegally obtained on the street.
They might say that, but that's not true.
That is true.
How do you know it's not
gun
true?
It's not true because it comes from the 20
obtained firearms.
Sure. So that comes from a 2016 report that the Bureau of Justice Statistics did,
right?
And it's oftentimes miscited. The reality is that 90% of guns that are used to commit crimes aren't purchased from a retail source, but only about 43% of those are illegally obtained on the black market. 20% of those are obtained from family members or other sources where they have been legally acquired. For instance, in Chicago, I think 60% of firearms can be traced back to legally acquired gun shops that are just outside the city.
Right, so I understand what you're saying. You're saying originally the guns always purchased legally, but is it illegal in Chicago, for instance, is it illegal to transfer a firearm from Indiana to Chicago? Is that against the law?
Not necessarily. It depends on how the sale is done from one private person to another. This is what liberals complain about all
the
time.
In the city of Chicago, it is illegal to transfer a weapon and bring it to Chicago and hold it without going to a gun shop and making in the city of Chicago.
Sure, in the city of Chicago, but you can transfer firearms from one person to another without having to do like having a federal license or doing some sort of background check.
Not in the city of Chicago.
What if you purchase it before going to Chicago?
But that's breaking the law. You're bringing the gun into the city of Chicago from Indiana. That's breaking the law. Criminals don't follow laws. That's my point. Is
sure,
what I'm
but the
saying.
Gun, but all of these guns are sourced.
And then the gang members buy it from other gang members on the streets.
So if the guns are sourced legally first, I mean, obtaining them illegally after might be a thing. But the statement that 90% of guns are bought and sold on the black market, when a friend could buy you a firearm and then you could just get it from them, paints a much different picture than the idea that all these guns are being purchased illegally. There are quite a few that are purchased illegally, sure, but that number is far lower than the 90% that's on the
side. Why is it hard to believe that more guns are brought into our country and sold illegally than the guns that you claim are still are being bought at gun stores. Because we have so many illegal aliens coming in now, and they're bringing guns, and they're selling them in the urban areas especially. In Chicago, they have some of the strictest gun laws you ever want to have, but yet the black-on-black violence is out of control.
Yeah, because most of the guns are brought in from out of the city. Yeah.
But that's illegal. To bring it from out of the city into Chicago, you're already breaking the law, so why would more laws stop that from happening? In my personal opinion, you're just restricting the people who like to follow the laws from having an easy time of purchasing a weapon for their leisure or whatever the case may be. I mean, you said something during the Joe Biggs debate. You said, quote, "The United States has more violent gun crime than any other country in the world right now." Do you still believe that to be true?
Compared to Western countries, I believe that's true.
But you said than any other country in the world.
That's probably
right
not
now.
True. If you want to go to a place like Honduras or something, I'm sure they're more violent. Typically,
Venezuela.
For the United States, I try not to compare ourselves to countries like Honduras or Venezuela.
Why?
Because I think we should probably shoot to be a little bit higher than that, no pun intended.
Is that like a race thing, or?
Why would it be a race thing?
I don't
Do you
know.
Think
why,
that a country like Honduras or Venezuela should be what we aim to be slightly
Brazil?
Better than?
Brazil has higher gun violence than we do here.
Sure. How about countries like France or Germany or the United Kingdom or
Spain? if you want to look at in France and Germany and the United Kingdom, it says, according to the FBI here, if you want to compare us to those countries, you have to go into the statistics. According to the FBI here, this is from the FBI's website, we have 33,000 violent street gangs here in America. Per capita, per 100,000, that's 9.8 per 100,000 in America, versus all of Europe, which has 0.674 per 100,000 gangs to people. So we have many more gangs, many more thousands of gangs to people here than any of those other developed countries do. So you've already conceded that most of the shootings in America are perpetrated by gang members. So why wouldn't you concede that this is the reason why we have higher gun violence here in this country? I mean, it's not even close.
I mean, it might be the reason, but you can take a multifaceted approach to these problems. If anything, I could argue you're making my point for me. If there are so many gangs in the United States, maybe we should restrict access to firearms more as a result of that.
But only the ones who follow the law. For instance, I just went to Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. They have a large outdoor shop there, a Bass Pro Shop, right there at Silverton Casino, I believe it is. Now, they have very cheap ammunition. I mean, we're talking like $7 for a 50-round box of 9mm ammo. I would love to be able to purchase that ammo and bring it home with me for my leisure here, but I can't. That's a felony in California to be able to transfer ammunition from Las Vegas to here. So I followed the law. Gang members aren't going to do that. You've already said that they're bringing guns that whatever they purchase in Indiana and then into the city of Chicago, which is already breaking the law. So my thing is this is the Second Amendment right. It's in the Constitution. We should be trying. It's more important to protect gun rights than it is to control gun ownership, in my personal opinion. And I think we have to do that without sacrificing people's rights. I think we have to find another way to be able to quell gang violence in this country, however that may be, because there's many illegally obtained guns flowing around in Chicago. It's a trafficking issue. And so we have to find a way to get those guns off the street, which they're already illegally obtained. They're already illegally possessed. So we have to find a way to do that. I don't know how to do that. I don't know the best approach to that. And I don't know if you have any suggestions either, but that would be mine.
Yeah, I mean, curbing the ability of people to purchase firearms legally would reduce the circulation of illegal firearms if we understand that at least half of these are coming initially from legal sources. Reducing the amount of people that can purchase a firearm legally means they're less likely to give it to a friend or another gang member. That's one thing. Gun buyback programs have been proposed in several areas and have been done with varying levels of success across different areas. You bring up the UK as an example. They have one of the lowest firearm homicide rates in the world. Now, they do kill people with knives as well, which is a problem that they're dealing with. But don't
we care about the lives?
Yeah, of course. But I mean, you tackle knives next, you tackle gang violence. It's a multifaceted problem.
Let me ask, why did the Founding Fathers make the Second Amendment?
I think in their, to me, mm-hmm. You're asking me?
Yeah.
I think in their, at that time, it was because of, you know, tyranny, government tyranny, and you know, remaining sovereign and things like that. I think at that time, yeah.
Why do you think they made this, the founding fathers made the Second Amendment?
I'm pretty sure that's true. I don't think it was initially envisioned as a way to protect yourself from like a criminal or a burglar, but right. I think it had more to do with arming citizens.
Are you concerned about government tyranny?
No, I think that concept is a little antiquated at this point.
Why do you think that?
Because we live in a different day and age. The idea of like a full-scale revolt against the government or whatever just seems unlikely or unwieldy.
But why do you think, even under Barack Obama, the fallen Messiah, they tried so hard to disarm the good folks, the people who keep the law, because when you create these laws, the innocent people are the ones who are punished for them, not the criminals.
Well, it seems like greater access to firearms end up punishing the more innocent people anyways. For instance, in every state where they've expanded right to carry laws, you've seen like an uptick in violence by like 12 to 15%. In places where firearms become more easily accessible to families, children are more likely to kill themselves with firearms, and just having a firearm in your house makes you much more likely to kill yourself with it. So it seems like expanding the ability for the innocent people or the good guys to own firearms.
I don't believe that to be true, but if it was true, it's not my fault that someone in their home are not sober-minded enough to do the right thing with their gun. I shouldn't have to be punished for that.
But you are anyway, whether you want to be or not.
But I should be. It's wrong for the government.
If somebody kills themselves and they leave a child that has to be taken care of, you're going to be paying for that child with your taxes. If somebody injures themselves and they have to go to the hospital, you're going to be paying.
But I shouldn't have to. That's a problem with the government.
Do you want to abolish the federal government and all taxation? Or
smaller government, yeah.
Okay, I mean, that's not where I'm at, but...
I just have to... You said that places with concealed carry laws, you see an uptick in violence.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, we're looking at... this is New Hampshire, Maine, North Dakota, Idaho, Vermont, Wyoming, all have permitless concealed carry. You can carry a weapon without additional permits.
Mm-hmm.
And their homicide rate is below 3 per 100,000. In New Hampshire, for instance, it's 1 per 100,000. And all of these six states have permitless concealed carry. These are the homicide rates.
Sure, so two things. One is the homicide rate and the percent white. I have no idea why those would ever be on the same graph.
Well, because if you look at the other states with permitless concealed carry,
I understand. I'm just saying that those two numbers probably don't belong on the same graph like that, firstly. Secondly, that graph doesn't tell you whether or not the homicide rate increased once right to carry laws were introduced. Which
I'm not saying that it does. I'm just saying that I'm just trying to touch on you said that concealed carry laws increase violent crime, and I'm just trying to show you that it obviously doesn't.
But
I'm not saying increase, that it decreases
sure, well, but an increase is a comparison from one point in time to the next, and that graph is only showing you a
certain. This has been consistent over the past 20 years. They've had the same homicide rate for the past 20 years.
All five of those states'
six
rates.
Of these states' homicide
okay.
rates.
Well, the meta-analyses that I am familiar with that have gone into this and dug through it and analyzed it show that there's like a 12 to 15% uptick in crime.
Except for the 90s. I mean, in the 1990s, crime across the Western world, which still many people can't explain why it happened, but in all Western countries, crime in the 1990s was higher.
Where did you get your stats from?
I mean, I could pull out the source, but I mean, it seems to be not very well debated that increasing right to carry laws have caused an uptick in violence.
I'm not saying, I'm just saying that they don't, what I'm saying is right to carry, concealed carry, permitless concealed carry, constitutional carry, whatever you want to call it, does not increase violence in these six states. Did not.
I understand what you're saying, but that graph doesn't say that.
It does say that. It says 2.6 per 100,000 homicides.
What if it was 1.6 before?
Half the national average.
What if it was 1.6 before?
Well, there's New Hampshire at 1 per 100,000.
What if it was at 0.5 before?
This has been consistent over the
past
20 years.
But your graph doesn't demonstrate that.
Well, I can show you additional statistics on that, but I'm just saying there's also a very easy correlation
with the more lax a state is with their gun laws, whether or not you need a permit to conceal carry, whether or not you need a permit to buy certain firearms, the more lax a state is, the more likely you are to die in that state due to a firearm as well. It's a pretty easily observed.
I mean, that's strange because it looks like you're more likely to die in a place like Chicago, for instance, than New Hampshire or Maine or Idaho or any of these other states with permitless concealed carry. You are. They have higher homicide rates.
Look at a state like Alaska. I'm pretty sure it has one of the biggest firearm-related deaths in the world.
Yeah, I've been through the statistics of Anchorage on my channel, and you can see the violence in Anchorage ticks that up. The violence in Anchorage, Alaska, the gang violence in Anchorage, Alaska in particular, ticks that up. It's the same thing with like Arkansas. Arkansas also has permitless concealed carry, but when you look at places like Little Rock, Arkansas, that's what's carrying most of the homicide for the entire state. If you take out Little Rock, Arkansas, then you're left with a homicide rate that is very similar to New Hampshire, Maine, Idaho, and some of these other concealed carry
states. Sure, but that doesn't change anything I've said other than trying to shoo the violence off onto certain groups of people. We can't just remove these people from our country.
I never advocated for removing anyone from our country. What I'm saying is, if most of the violence is caused by gang members and people who shouldn't have guns in the first place, who are transferring guns illegally from Indiana to Chicago, for instance, which, by the way, I mean, many of these guns are already flowing around in Chicago, bought again, sold again, bought again, sold again. These are illegally obtained firearms just flowing around in Chicago. Then we should find a way to go after the people who are illegally possessing their weapons instead of hindering people who are legally possessing their weapons from obtaining additional ammunition. For instance, there's a new law trying to be passed in California and Connecticut. They're trying to add an additional 50% tax on ammunition. I mean, does that sound like it's going to decrease gun violence to you? These are ridiculous proposals.
I mean, that policy...
They've all tried in London, and they're still having problems.
Sure, so that the policy of increasing the cost of ammunition doesn't really sound like it would do much to me. That sounds like a pretty stupid policy. But perhaps making it more difficult to acquire a firearm legally in Indiana would reduce the likelihood of a firearm being given to somebody and then traveled illegally to Chicago to commit a crime.
Why... Here's my question. Why is Vermont not making New York as dangerous as Chicago? If your theory is correct, that because you can purchase weapons so easily in Indiana and then illegally transfer them from Indiana to Chicago, why is Vermont not making New York as dangerous as Chicago then?
It's possible that the populations of places like Vermont aren't as predisposed towards committing crime as other populations are.
Okay, what about Idaho?
That would be my guess. There are certain spots in the United States where violent crime happens more often than other spots.
Why?
Nowadays, we can't trust the statistics about gun laws that are coming from liberals, children of the lie, because they want to take away your rights to bear arms. Why would you trust any reports that they're putting out? Because they are not going to tell the truth. They're children of the lie.
You have to go by what the official... I mean, if you think that, like, the entire DOJ is lying to you about, you know, gun crimes or gun statistics, I don't know how you would begin to have a reasonable conversation with somebody at that point. You'd just be talking about how both of your, I guess, feelings are.
Well, you know how corrupt they are today. I mean, we've seen
it over
and over again with the Great White Hope being in the White House. But would you want to repeal the Second Amendment?
Possibly. I don't know. It would depend.
You would want to repeal the Second Amendment?
I mean, if you could demonstrate that it would seriously curb the amount of, I guess, lives lost in the United States, it might be worth considering.
That's amazing. Would you want to repeal the Second Amendment?
No, because I've seen what happened in London when they took away all their firearms there. And they're having a very big issue there right now with knives.
Have you seen that?
Yeah, I think, I want to say in 2015, their knife crime per capita was the lowest it had been since 1989. But then over the past couple of years, there's been an uptick in some knife violence. But yeah,
well, here's from The Guardian. Doctors are calling for the ban of dagger-type kitchen knives. Do you agree
Let's
with
say
that?
Theoretically, let's say that they do advocate for a ban like that. What would be your opposition to it?
I think it's ridiculous to go after the tool that someone uses to kill someone. Then we'll have to, I mean, if we would really have to, because the left, the policies by like the Democratic Party and things like that, the policies are to go after the AR-15, which accounts for about 30 deaths
sure,
a year.
Sure, so I'm not going to make, AR-15s are scary. I'm not going to make any arguments against them here because they account for a ludicrously low number of deaths in the U.S.
So, but why does the Democratic Party want to only target the AR-15 then?
Because most Democrats have never touched a gun in their entire lives and the AR-15 looks scary.
I would say most politicians in general, but yes.
Democrats are afraid of guns?
Most people are. A lot of Republicans talk about guns as well.
You know why, right?
Because people use them to fight for their freedom. I don't know why, Jesse.
Beta.
Okay, oh my God. Here's the Guardian. All secondary schools in London to be offered knife detectors.
Yeah, I'm not really understanding what the But the point is of the articles. Are you saying that like having a knife detector?
Knife free. What I'm saying is,
do you think this is bad or?
Well, what I'm saying, there's the knife ban, knife turn, police knife amnesty. What I'm saying is they instituted this handgun ban in England and Wales in 1997, I believe it was 1996.
96, yeah.
And their homicide rate did a nice uptick there.
There's like 186 deaths that were like tallied on due to a pretty extreme event in I think 2002 or 2004.
But now they're trying to ban knives, is what I'm saying.
I don't think they're trying to ban all knives.
After murder
like
rate surpasses New York City, London Mayor Sadiq Khan calls for sharper knife control. So they already started their gun control. Now their homicide rates surpass New York City. Now they're trying knife control. And as a matter of fact, Sadiq Khan is even trying to ban cars from driving in certain areas.
I was going to ask about that. So should they ban knives?
So my primary drive would be to reduce the number of people that are killed.
That's my
primary drive. So if banning the types of violent knives that are used to commit crimes would achieve that end, then yeah, sure.
In England or Europe, the Allah Uba people are killing people now with cars and trucks and things. Should they ban cars and trucks?
I don't think that many people are getting killed by cars.
Yeah, they're trying to ban cars from driving in certain areas. I mean,
cars are already banned from driving in certain areas. It's a very vague statement. I mean, you can't drive cars on sidewalks,
I think that though that is really comparing apples to oranges. Though I mean, I would say that if we just stick on the gun crime, as far as like the gun crime goes in certain areas, like he said that.
In the past 30 minutes, we were talking about knife crime.
What I'm saying is they banned handguns, and now they're still having a homicide rate that is very, very high. They just surpassed New York City, which has 900,000 legally owned guns. And they're still having the same issue. Now they're putting metal detectors in public schools, elementary schools. They're sending people out there to talk to children about carrying knives.
You still haven't demonstrated why any of this is a bad thing.
But I'm not saying that it's a bad thing. I'm saying they just keep going after the tools that they use. Let's say that they ban all knives. They start having knife amnesty. They start running up into people's houses and grabbing their knives and machetes or whatever sharp object that they are killing people with. You're still going to have the same issue. People in gangs killing each other that are in other gangs. Yeah. And they're going to be doing that with bats and chains or whatever else they can get their hands on. London demonstrates that perfectly. And I want to touch on something else that you said during the Joe Biggs debate.
The whole point of using a tool to kill somebody is that the tool works as a form of force amplification, right? I would kill somebody or multiple people that I wouldn't otherwise be able to with a firearm because I can't do it without a firearm. A knife is a similar thing, right? There are multiple people you could kill or a person you could kill with a knife that you wouldn't be able to otherwise. If there are certain groups of people that are more predisposed towards committing violent acts than other groups of people, then removing force amplification from those people seems like it would achieve some positive end. Are people still going to kill each other with bats or chains or whatever else? Yeah, I'm sure, but that number is probably going to be lower than it was with knives because it's harder to kill somebody with a bat or a chain than it is with a knife. And it's harder to kill somebody with a knife than it is with a firearm, or at least multiple people, depending on the situation.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
The Father's Day has new merchandise available. Every purchase goes right back to the show. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Mama Mia, hola, y señor. Get off that stage, boy!
I want to touch on something else you said. You said, quote, the gun buyback programs have been successful. Quote, this is your words, homicide rate in Australia decreased because of that. They didn't suffer any more mass shootings. Do you still stand by that quote?
In Australia, I believe that's true, yeah.
So if we go to Australia, mm-hmm. and we look at the period prior to the gun buyback program, you can see there was virtually zero mass shootings that have happened. During this time, there was four, and then after that time, there was none. So if we look at Australia, we look at the homicide rate of Australia per 100,000, you can see that in red here, this is America, this is according to the AIC, their government statistics in Australia. and America's homicide rate in red, Australia's homicide rate in blue. And since the 1996 gun buyback program from 1996 to 2001, their homicide rate per 100,000 remained virtually the same. As a matter of fact, it went from 1.6 to 1.8 in a six-year period, whereas our homicide rate here in America with no gun amnesty, no gun buyback program, decreased from 7.4 per 100,000 to 5.5 per 100,000. So we had a larger homicide per 100,000 rate decrease in America than they did in Australia with their gun buyback program. So I don't believe that it was actually successful, not to mention after the Port Arthur massacre in Australia, Australia now has more legally owned guns in Australia than they did before the 1996 Port Arthur massacre. So I don't believe that those two things are relatable. I think that there were no mass shootings in Australia before. There was two, and then they had this gun buyback program, which wasn't targeted at all guns, by the way. It was only certain types of weapons there. And they went back to the same level that they had of mass shootings than they did before. And the guy who committed the mass shooting, by the way, was a deranged lunatic, I believe they said, and they reported
sure.
on this.
Before we move back, I'm curious. Did you create that graph, or did somebody create it for you?
I created this based on the AIC statistics, crimestatsaic.gov. You can go to that link.
I've been to the link. I'm curious why you ended at 2001. You took a five-year period here and tried to establish a trend. Why?
Well, because from the 1990s, like I've said before, many different intellectuals have discussed the crime in the 1990s being higher in every Western country, being high for some reason. They don't know why. But in every Western country, crime was higher in the 1990s. So if we, because the gun amnesty program, the
when
gun
you say,
buyback
just
program.
Just curious, when you say crime was higher in the 1990s, compared to what? Because
crime
in the U.S.
Not,
has been...
Not higher. Crime increased. We saw an increase in crime in the 1990s, in that
okay.
decade.
Because it's very low from the 60s, for instance, even compared
no,
to...
No, actually, in, actually since the 1960s, violent crime has increased about three times.
Would you make any changes?
Well, wait,
to
hold on. I'm very curious on this graph, real quick, just because I'm very familiar with these numbers. I'm very curious why you did a five-year here instead
because,
of going
forward.
Because
the gun amnesty only lasted 6 weeks in Australia, so you would assume that you would see an immediate effect.
Not necessarily.
Why
and
not?
If you, firstly, because there were other programs that were implemented afterwards, different types of gun buybacks and whatnot, and. If you
we can keep
that
going,
graph,
and we can see a larger decrease in America. We went from 7.4.
But
we're
I'm
down
pretty
to
sure that's not
4.8.
True because if you go like 5 years out on the Australia side, there, I'm pretty sure that the homicide rate drops to like a 1.1.
What I'm trying to say is that the gun amnesty was pretty much immediate. It was a six-week period of gun amnesty. It was what they call a gun amnesty over there, which is a weird name for it, but gun buyback program. And so you would expect the results to be immediate. What I'm arguing is that there. In a six-year period, their homicide rate actually went from 1.6 to 1.8. It's probably lower now. It's probably somewhere around like 1.5 per 100,000 or something like that. But we saw a larger decrease per 100,000 in homicides in America since that 1996 period. Now, if we go all the way back to the 1950s, violent crime, and this is one of the quotes that you said in the Joe Biggs debate, which is actually statistically incorrect. You said that violent crime is lower than it was in the 1960s. That's not true.
Yeah, I think I'm looking more towards the 80s is what I was thinking of.
Okay, so yeah, because in the 1960s, we had rape per 100,000, assault per 100,000, robbery per 100,000, and many other types of violent crime, aside from murder, were three times less per 100,000. This is the reason why your mother and your father always like to say, you know, we could leave our doors unlocked and stuff like that, you know, things that boomers say. But anyway.
Are you for gun buyback or not?
I mean, if it's been demonstrated to work, and I believe most of the consensus around Australia was that their gun buyback program was largely successful. I mean, their violent crime did drop quite a bit. Maybe not in the immediate, like, 4 or 5 years afterwards, but after that it did.
Amazing. Would you make any changes in the gun laws in America?
Because of the way that America's shifting right now, I would concede that probably background checks, at the very least. I mean, I'm completely okay with the DROS program that our state has, like Orange County, it's very easy for me to be able to purchase a weapon. I don't like the fact that they have made the AR-15s in this state where you have to break them open at the top to be able to retrieve the magazine. I think all those things are stupid. I think our politicians, and this touches on what Destiny says, most of our politicians probably never touched a gun in their entire life, and they don't understand.
That's right.
But I think that these things are just ridiculous, and they're a hindrance, and I'm really upset about these things. Adding 50% tax onto ammunition, not allowing me to go to Bass Pro Shops in Las Vegas and bring home, you know, boxes of ammo that I can take to the range and have fun with. I think that it's ridiculous. And the fact that our politicians care more about 30 deaths a year by AR-15s than they do the thousands of homicides that criminal aliens commit,
yeah,
is mind-boggling to me. Mind-boggling to me.
Would you make changes in the gun laws in America?
Yeah, I think giving the ATF more teeth would probably be better for them to actually have a real database to manage the purchase and sale and flow of firearms through the country would probably be positive.
Really?
Enabling the CDC to study gun violence more. I think they were authorized to do like a single study would probably be beneficial as well, so that we could have better answers on how to curb gun violence in the U.S.
That's amazing. I'm not for the background check.
Okay.
Because I don't trust the people who's getting the information. Because if they can get the information on you and know you have guns in your home, how many you have, how can you trust those people? They can't be trustworthy.
I mean, if somebody, especially if the FBI really wants to know, or if like the NSA really wants to know, they probably have ways of finding that out anyway.
But see, I don't trust the background check. Because okay. You can't trust government these days.
And you also can't trust crazy people with guns, so I mean...
That's why I want to have my own guns so that...
Yeah, but demonstrably that doesn't seem to be true. Like, the myth of the self-defense handgun doesn't seem to be borne out in any of the literature either. Just owning a firearm doesn't make you safer. If anything, it makes you more likely to kill yourself with it.
No, that's not true. When I was growing up...
Actually, the CDC did do a study. I don't know if you're aware of the CDC study that was in 2013. Are you aware of that study?
What about it?
Well, Barack Obama authorized the CDC to do the largest study into gun violence. Are you aware of the statistics that came out of that study?
Not maybe. I don't remember if I read
it. Oh, this is out of Forbes magazine.
Okay.
This particular writer says, quoting the CDC research, almost all national survey estimates indicate that defensive gun uses by victims are at least as common as offensive gun uses by criminals, with estimates of annual uses ranging from about 500,000 to more than 3 million in the context of about 300,000 violent crimes involving firearms in 2008. So if we turn this into a graph here out of the CDC, we're looking at the high number, and I realize this is the high number, 3 million defensive gun uses per year versus 200,000 offensive gun uses per year, according to the study that the CDC did in 2013. And this is the same exact year that Barack Obama changed the definition of a mass shooting to 3 or more people killed during that mass shooting. So you can research this for yourself. I'm not asking
you
to believe
me. It has no bearing on what I said, though. Having a self-defense handgun doesn't necessarily, just because more of them were used doesn't necessarily mean the outcomes were beneficial for the people using them, or that the amount of violence that those people were exposed to didn't increase as well.
You know, there's 2 million homes that are broken into every single year, right? And I think about almost half of them where someone is actually at home. I believe
sure,
that
and for things like property crime, if you defend yourself with any weapon besides a gun, the outcomes are actually more beneficial than if you use a gun to defend your property.
Well, I mean, not according to the CDC study.
That study doesn't say anything about whether or not you had a successful defense of your home. It just shows how many times those firearms were used.
Well, those things aren't recorded accurately.
They absolutely are recorded.
No,
self-defense handgun use is very commonly studied, and it's something that's been pretty widely analyzed by a lot of people.
According to the CDC, it could be anywhere from 3 million, it could be as high as 3 million defensive gun uses versus 200,000 offensive gun uses.
Sure. So again, it's not answering the question that you're trying to say that it's answering. Whether or not those gun uses were successful, whether or not those gun uses led to increased violence against the people using them, whether or not an alternative tool would have been just as beneficial or more beneficial, which seems to be the case, isn't really answered by the fact that a lot of people use guns to defend their homes.
Why are you worried about the lives lost by guns and not concerned about the lives lost by criminal aliens, for instance?
Why am I not concerned? I am concerned about the lives lost by criminal
aliens. But why are you advocating for policy changes surrounding the gun issue, but not advocating for policy changes surrounding the immigration issue, for instance?
We'll ignore the fact that this is a complete and total non sequitur. But I mean, I don't know what kind of illegal immigration policies are talking about.
You said in your debate with Joe Biggs, mm-hmm. This is your quote, there's 40,000 homicides by guns every single year. Do you still stand by that quote?
I don't believe I said that. If I did, I misspoke. I believe it's around 10 to 12,000 homicides per year and about 20,000 suicides.
That's 3 times less than the flu. Do you think that we have a gun violence epidemic in this country? The flu kills 30,000 people a year.
Okay, and so we also have flu shots. I don't understand what the point is.
Well, I'm just saying, if there's 10,000 homicides by guns each and every year.
Okay, and 20,000
suicides.
Mostly
perpetrated by gang members.
Okay, and 20,000 suicides that aren't generally perpetrated by gang members.
But they use it because the gun's there. They can hang themselves. We don't even top the top 10 for suicides.
What you just said was very true. They use it because it's there. Having a firearm in the home makes you more likely to kill yourself with it just by virtue of
that's not going to stop them from committing suicide.
But it does. The numbers bear that out. If you have a firearm in the home,
the top 10, Japan is number 7 for suicides per 100,000. And they hang themselves in forests out there. We don't even top the top 10 in suicides per 100,000 in this country.
That's good. I'm not trying to make top 10 lists for how many people kill themselves in the U.S. Just
right,
because we're not on
I'm
the worst
the
part of the list doesn't...
there isn't going to stop them from killing themselves.
But it does. It's basic human psychology. If you were to put a button next to a person's desk and they could push it to kill themselves, a lot more people would probably do it when they're having a bad day as well.
I would say that probably some people would.
Being able to pull the trigger on a gun is much easier than tying a rope up and hanging yourself.
Okay, but that doesn't mean that we should hinder people who are okay with guns. Vast majority. Go ahead.
When I was growing up, there were no gun laws that we have today. And when I turned 15, they gave me my first rifle. No one ever taught me how to use it or told me not to or how to or anything. I went out and I used my rifle. I killed a squirrel or something in a tree. And yet you didn't have the gun, the
mass
type of people.
Nothing.
Yeah, mass shooting and all that's happening then. And guns was everywhere when I was growing up. What's the difference between then and now?
There's a lot of differences between then and now. Economic disparity, the differences between...
Well, we were poor. I grew up in a house that had a 10-room top. Have you ever used the bathroom outside?
Yeah.
My toilet was outside.
Okay.
And so that's poor, right?
I don't know. It depends.
No, we that would be considered poor if your toilet is made outside.
I've been on farms where they have, like, outhouses and stuff. I wouldn't consider them poor, sure.
But... the thing about it, we didn't have the money that people have today. Why did we see this type of stuff happening then? It was very, very rare. What's the difference between then and now?
That's a very complicated question.
You don't know the answer to that?
There's differences in the structures of families. There are differences in cultural attitudes towards firearms. There's probably differences in the amount of gangs that are present. There's differences in the types of in the structures of cities, access to guns, access to drugs, access to people that are likely to kill each other over either of these things. There's a ton of differences between then and now.
What do you say the difference between then and now?
I would say that there's... I have theories. I don't have any statistics to back this up as solid fact. I have theories that, you know, for instance, the white Americans, non-Hispanics, they were at 5%, I think, of children born out of wedlock. Today we're at 30%. Black Americans went from 22%. Today they're at 73%. Hispanic Americans upticked as well. We have a massive influx of changing demographics since the 1950s. So I think that the sense of community, the sense of consistency, the sense of technology, there's all sorts of things. You have children who were prescribed with psychotropic multi-class drugs were only, I think, 2% back in the 1950s versus today, where it's almost a quarter of all children who are prescribed with psychotropic drugs, Adderall, because their parents aren't willing to just deal with their energy that these kids have and shove an iPad in their face. I think there's a big, huge cultural change, and these are the things that I would like to target. I would like to target the hive that is creating these things like mass shooters and things like that. Because if you look in the 1950s, there was no mass shootings. We had the same handguns with the same amount of ammunition in the magazines, and people weren't walking into school shooting each other. 90% of all the mass shootings that happened in this country are perpetrated with handguns. We had the same. I have a 1911 from that era that works better than my Beretta PX4 Storm that I just bought like 2 weeks ago.
Amazing.
So I think that I think we have to target those things. I think we have to focus on the cultural decline and lots of different things.
Would you agree to that?
Yeah, of course. I just don't see why it can't be multifaceted. I think there are absolutely problems that we have today in regards to people getting along with each other, in terms of the happiness levels that people experience, in terms of our disconnectedness from society. You see a lot of people that are discontent with that. Definitely you can target things like that. You can also find ways to keep people from hurting themselves in the
meantime. When I was growing up, the differences between then and now is that they have families. Men and women got married. They raised their kids. They set a good example.
Sure.
It was unheard of for black-on-black violence or for whatever reason. And black people now, most don't have more values. They don't have families. They don't have a sense of self-control. And that's the reason that the gun control, the gun issues happening right now. Because if they had values, if they had parents, if they had love in their hearts, they wouldn't be killing each other. Would you agree to that?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. Generally. So why not change that? Rebuild families, rebuild men, rebuild families, teach morality by example.
Yeah,
and why take away the innocent people's guns and not change the hearts and minds of the people?
Again, you can do both.
Do the second one if you had the more values in order. You just need to do one. Rebuild families so that these kids would see the right thing.
When you talk about like rebuilding families, this is like a very complicated, again, a multifaceted. You're talking about an intersection between the criminal justice system, because people that are locked up in jail have a much higher chance of committing violent acts in the future or having their life go awry in the future. You're talking about access to wealth. People that are wealthier tend to get married earlier. You're talking about other forms of access to wealth. Wealthier people tend to be able to afford contraception or abortion or have more means of recreation.
But you don't need all that if you're
married.
But
I'm saying like marriage isn't something that people just randomly decide to do. There are a lot of conditions that will predict whether somebody will get married.
But they don't need to have children until they get married.
People generally don't have children out of wedlock because they need to. It's usually because it's an accident or because of lack of other
stuff. No, not an accident.
I would say there's a big cultural aspect to it nowadays.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at the gang members, this is the gang members per 100,000 people by race in America. And you can see that the black and Hispanic are at 1,159 per 100,000, Hispanics at 1,110 per 100,000, and the white non-Hispanic are at 78.97 per 100,000, and Asian is like negligible. When you look at the statistics, the East Asians, like the Chinese, they're just like trying to learn piano, violin, and I mean, so there's a huge cultural aspect I think that a lot of this is perpetrated by Hollywood. Like as far as the black community, I was talking to Uncle Hotep, right, and he was talking about how Hollywood, they prop up blacks being in gangs and selling drugs and, you know, stealing cars and all sorts of different things. I think that's a big issue. Like, we should not be propping that up on a pedestal and having that be like something to strive to later on in life. See, different cultures, like the Asians, they don't have, like, they're not shunned in their little community or their little group at school for talking, you know, articulately or something like that. But I know that I've talked to black Americans and they say that they are. They're shunned for talking like a white guy or something
they
like
are.
That. Sure. So these are big issues that I think
If you're going to argue for greater representation of minorities in media, I absolutely 100% will get on board with that. I think
what
you just said, I 100% agree. Representation of minorities in media is very important. If your only role models in media are gangsters or something like that,
we should be saying that that's a bad thing.
Sure. So I generally agree with that. Also, keep in mind that media doesn't just tell us, what to do. In some ways, media is a reflection of who we are. It's not like everybody in the country was chill and then all of a sudden the media just created these horrible images for people to strive to or aspire to. It's more like those tend to be a reflection of the times, in and of themselves. You know, when you look at, a lot of people point to things like black culture and why don't they trust the cops or whatnot. Well, because a lot of them got the shit kicked out of them by the cops in the early 1900s. Not all the time.
No, it was their fault.
When you're talking about about like pre-segregation and whatnot?
And that's a lie, too. That was made up.
Okay.
Really,
well,
was made up.
Didn't you live in under Jim Crow?
I was there. Yeah. That's right. I grew up under Jim Crow.
And you could walk into a school with white children and learn from the same teachers.
I never wanted to.
Why not?
I was satisfied with the
teachers. You were satisfied with your shittier schools, with your worse teachers, and your less funding available to you?
I'm sorry?
You were satisfied with the worse institutions available to you that didn't have the same funding?
It wasn't that way. They've been lying to you, I'm telling you. Let me ask you, John Adams said, and I want both of you to respond to this.
Okay.
John Adams said the Constitution was made to govern a moral and righteous people. Are the races in America equally moral and righteous? And would addressing immorality within these groups help the gun violence?
I mean, every group in America is
John Adams right about the righteous and moral people.
Sure.
He's right about that.
That we need a righteous people to govern?
Right. We need
given that we have a democracy and our
rule. He said that the Constitution was made to govern a moral and righteous people. Was he right about that?
Probably.
Not sure?
I'm pretty sure democracy needs a righteous people to, otherwise they would vote for horrible things, right?
What do you say about that?
I would agree with John Adams' statement there.
And are the races in America equally moral and righteous, and would addressing those issues within these groups maybe in this violence that they are having?
I don't think any two racial groups in America are equal to one another because their histories are very different from one another. And then addressing moral problems.
Biology as well.
we can get to that, I guess. But addressing moral issues, I mean, yeah, you can do that to some extent.
Would that make a difference, though?
I mean, like, it depends on what you mean by address moral issues. Typically, just telling people to act better doesn't usually do much. You usually have to, you know, go a little bit farther with it. So, like James suggested, greater representation in media can be a way to do that. Different types of programs, like after-school programs, stuff related to that can help people, give people role models.
That's not going to help, though. The blacks have midnight basketball. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
Midnight basketball is not working. They go down on the court now and kill each other.
Yeah, no, in Chicago, there was just a story recently. It was very, very concerning to me. Yeah, I'm from Chicago originally. And they were shooting up the funeral of the of the gang member who got shot they went and shot the funeral up.
Isn't that funny?
Isn't it?
Not really, that's pretty sad. Do you feel like you're biologically predisposed to commit criminal activities, you or your family?
What does that mean?
Well, so James suggested that maybe biologically you might have an inclination as a black person to be more violent than a white person.
We did then, but I believe they do now.
That evolved in one generation? All the genes changed?
I said. I said that there's biological aspects that certainly lead to people committing more crime. So there was a Harvard study on, for instance, and we're talking about on average here. There was a Harvard study.
Not me.
Right, not just
kidding.
Well, we can look at the Rushton Jensen study. Yeah. The Rushton Jensen study said that, and even, you know, academics agree that a lower average IQ makes you more predisposed to commit crime. We look at the Port Arthur massacre shooter. He had a 70 IQ. Would you agree that a lower average IQ makes you more predisposed to commit crime?
I don't know if that's true offhand, but I could believe that, sure.
Yeah, Rushton Jensen study. So if we look at the 100 years of IQ data that we have, this data, 100 years of IQ testing, we'll see a difference in the average IQ of black Americans, average IQ of white Americans, average IQ of Hispanic Americans, average IQ of Asian Americans, with Asians at the very top. And so I think that we can find a correlation there. It might not be a direct correlation of why Asians commit like almost no crimes, or East Asians, and why they have the highest SAT scores, and they're suing Harvard right now because of affirmative action. I would say that there's some correlation that we could talk about there without being called racist, you know, and all these different things. I think we can talk about those things.
Well, the problem is you weren't talking about a correlation. You were talking about a causal effect of your race impacting your IQ.
Well, I'm not saying, no. What I'm saying is we look at the homicide rate, the weapons violation rate per 100,000. The homicide rate's the same rankings. Black Americans, 130 per 100,000. Hispanics, 42 per 100,000. Whites, 23 per 100,000. That's according to FBI data. And Asians are, like, not even on a chart. They don't even register on the chart. So I'm saying if we look at these things, you go to the greatschools.org, and because I have three children, and you know, I look for schools when we were buying our house, and you go to greatschools.org, and if you go to the richest area, the richest district, or the poorest district, and you're always going to see those same rankings. And when they talk about like the Rushton Jensen study, you look at James D. Watson, who discovered the DNA was the double helix, he talked about this a lot. And you can find some sort of correlation that we're not allowed to talk about that for some reason nowadays.
Well, we're allowed to talk about correlations. You keep saying this word correlation, but what you were talking about was a causal link.
Well, is that not biological? What I'm saying is
no,
is
not
IQ
necessarily.
Biological?
Not necessarily.
Well,
they say
that up until 18, it is.
Well, who IQ do you believe is the highest, black or white?
Right now in the United States, probably white people.
And why is that?
Greater access to wealth, greater access to education.
No.
Do you think it's because of the genes?
I think it's because of, well, that's a good question.
Well, I mean, evolved on different continents.
I think because of,
How can you say if we all evolved on different continents that there's not biological difference? I mean, look, you're not going to see many Asians going in the NBA, and there's a reason for that. It's because of physical differences. Black Americans are more, they're more athletic. Inherently, biologically, no one disputes that. if we
there are plenty of people that dispute a lot of these things. These are it is very hard to tease out a biological causal relationship between somebody's genes and a highly polygenetic trait like IQ.
Well,
I understand the desire.
You're disputing the person who discovered that DNA was
who's been largely also discredited by the entire academic community.
Well,
there are hundreds of geneticists that have signed on to these really broad letters saying that they're very uncomfortable.
Rushton Jensen.
With the,
Richard Herrnstein, Charles Murray, the guy who discovered DNA effectively, he discovered DNA was
so
a double
these
helix.
People are all making, first of all, Charles Murray has no background in biology
years of IQ
whatsoever.
Data.
Yeah,
100
IQ
years
data,
of IQ.
Yeah, but IQ data, well, hold on. IQ data doesn't necessarily mean there's a causal relationship. Like, you keep pointing out how good Asian Americans are compared to black Americans without even thinking for a second, well, the history of these two people in this country is incredibly different. Black people were brought over 200, 250 years ago on slave ships against their will from their homes to the United States to live here under slavery and then under legalized segregation, and now for the past 60, 70 years, we're kind of starting to right the ship. Asian Americans, a lot of them largely...
Then why was the family structure better under Jim Crow?
This is a single question. Asian Americans largely immigrate over here because they have the money to do so from China or other countries.
And how do you explain that blacks were smarter
than...
I'm just saying there's massive...
Under Jim Crow law than they are today. How do you explain that?
It's a very complicated question.
That's not complicated.
So you think it's just because of
genes? London didn't have Jim Crow. London didn't have Jim Crow laws.
I can only side with the majority of the academic community that is incredibly uncomfortable making the assertion that biology is the reason why certain groups of people are more violent than other groups of people.
Yeah, and that academic community is the same academic community that got Brown University to delete a study on rapid onset gender dysphoria because it might hurt someone's feelings. Okay, this is the same academic community that props up gender dysphoria as something cool to be nowadays.
I don't
completely
think
denying science. This is
okay,
a science
well,
denial.
No.
There are biological differences between men and women. You have people
firstly,
who are on your side of the
when
aisle
you talk
who
about,
walk
firstly,
off the stage.
Okay, so firstly, if we want to deny academic research or academic literature, we can only engage in conspiracy theory, which is something I'm not interested in doing. I can only go by what the literature says. Secondly, if you want to talk about science denial...
I can only go by what the literature says.
Sure, and if you want to go by science denial, I mean, the APA has made pretty clear statements regarding transgender individuals or gender dysphoria. These aren't fantastical things. They might make conservatives uncomfortable, but just because it makes you uncomfortable doesn't mean the science isn't real.
The APA, once within their study on gender dysphoria, said it was a mental condition.
Gender dysphoria is considered a mental condition.
So why are we propping up a mental condition?
We don't prop up a mental condition.
Why
we try
are we
to
not
alleviate.
Trying to help these
we
people
do
with
try
the
to
highest
help them.
Suicide rates.
We do try
and
to help
say
them.
That it's okay to.
We do try to help them, and the number one way that the APA suggests to alleviate gender dysphoria is through things like hormone therapy and sex reassignment surgery.
I would say that that's probably not the best. There's mothers who are crying.
I can only point to what the literature says because
they're coming home with their breasts chopped off and their ovaries removed.
So nobody chops off their breasts randomly, and that's
okay,
not
yes.
how sex
these
reassignment surgery.
Daughters
works.
Are coming home.
They don't. It's not happening. This is
fantastical. I gotta
ask
this is, because
this
we are
is
in it. We're coming to
absolutely happening. These are mothers who have
we'll
told
have you guys
their story.
Back about this.
Well,
right?
I mean, like
but
the outcomes are
this.
Very clear that sex reassignment surgery and hormone therapy produces
think,
largely positive results.
Why are we
results
propping
for,
this up in our culture,
that
in our media, in our Hollywood?
And all
if
that.
It's the highest, if they have the highest suicide rate of any community,
that
why
decreases
are we
once they've experienced sex reassignment surgery or hormone therapy.
Okay,
this
guys.
Is, anyway, go ahead.
Let me do it, yeah.
Go ahead. I don't even know how we got onto this particular
right.
subject.
Because you brought us here by the academic.
I have you back about that, but let me ask you this. You are a gamer, right?
Yeah, sometimes.
And games mean that you sit, gamer means you sit around all day playing on the computer thing, right?
Sometimes, yeah.
How old are you?
30 years old.
You keep asking this question.
So how do you reconcile or deal with the fact that games are very violent, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that a little problematic for you?
No. That doesn't. There's no
is
studies
that, an issue?
That show that.
I've never seen any.
I don't
think it's supported anywhere that the idea that violent video games are predictors of violent behavior for children. I've never seen that.
Do you play games too?
I play games with my children sometimes. I play video games, but there's
don't
no.
They have a lot of violence in those games. Like
yeah, but I don't agree. I don't think that. I don't think that that's going to cause someone to go kill someone.
But my question is, how are you able, Destiny, to be shooting and killing on the games, but you don't want to do it in real life if you had to.
Well, he did pull a gun out on stream one time.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, we've talked about guns on stream before, yeah.
No, but you thought someone was breaking into your home, didn't you?
It's possible. I don't remember. Okay. This might have happened.
And
one
you pull
time,
your gun out?
Well, that's what he's supposed to do.
I'm not sure. I don't know. We talked about guns a lot on stream, yeah. But no, I've never killed anyone before.
So you don't want to ban certain types of weapons? Because I heard you say that before. You said that you're not really, you don't think that that would do anything.
The obsession over AR-15s is very dumbfounded. It's very stupid.
Okay. I mean, I would agree with you. I think that it's mostly politicians in general, you know, on both
sure.
sides of the aisle.
And the restrictions that are on AR-15s here are very stupid.
They're stupid. Have you seen the...
I've shot with them with the weird, clanky, bulky bullshit.
Illegal aliens are bringing in truckloads of guns and drugs and all this thing, and these things are ending up in the black communities and urban areas.
I don't know if illegals are bringing all the guns. I mean, we sell plenty of guns legally here. I mean, there's tons of firearms we can just buy in the United States.
Are you for putting up a big, beautiful wall around the border? Because if you did, that would stop a lot of the guns from coming.
I don't think that would stop a lot of the guns. A lot of these just come in via... No.
You're not for the wall?
A lot of these guns come in via port of entry, via sea, via air.
I know, but the ones that are coming across illegally without the wall being there, are you for putting up the wall and stopping that?
I don't think the wall would help much.
Are you for the wall?
No.
Are you?
I am for the wall, yeah. The statistics have showed that the wall in Hungary is 99.9% effective. The wall in Israel was 99.9%.
The borders are far smaller in those countries than in the U.S.
Why do you think normal...
Right, we're not talking about a wall around the... There's many natural barriers where we don't need a wall or a barrier in place, but...
Why do you think, why do you think regular... I mean, just human beings don't have the common sense to know that a wall works?
I don't know. I mean, I break with many people who are supposed to be on my side ideologically, too, on many different issues. So I think that a lot of people are just very tribal. I think that some people are just very tribal. Maybe they do agree. I mean, this is something that even Chuck Schumer said under the Barack Obama administration. He said, in 2001, we were able to, you know, build a barrier around our southern border, which drastically will reduce, you know, people coming over here illegally. Chuck Schumer, and now he's talking something completely different now that Trump's in office. So it's just a tribal thing.
Why do you think regular human beings don't have sense enough to know that a wall works?
So, I think a regular human being, the sense is that it would work, but it's when you dig into a little bit more and you apply a little bit of critical thinking, you realize...
Trump,
so.
Huh?
What?
Just
well, no, it's because it's
the great white hope.
Like the majority of people that are here illegally.
They just hate the great white hope, right?
No.
Yeah.
The wall is a highly impractical idea. I mean, like most of our huge seizures, I think, was it like the largest seizure of, I want to say it was fentanyl related drugs, just happened at a port of entry like within the past couple of weeks, I think. I don't remember if it was fentanyl or marijuana.
Yeah, but mostly the drugs that come over in the
are coming through port of entry.
Through the port of entry.
It's not like people are fast and furious driving in the desert.
Time,
over.
Guys, I would love it.
I will say this one last thing. 487,000 border apprehensions. Just in 2017 alone, the fiscal year. So.
Amazing. Isn't that amazing?
Sure.
Amazing.
All right, amazing.
My final question, did you have fun?
I always have fun.
Did you have fun?
Yeah, it's fun here.
Right on. Do you like him now?
I mean, we disagree a lot.
I don't know him, but I'm sure outside of politics.
You didn't know he was that smart, right?
Yeah, we've spoken before.
Oh, you have? Oh, you guys know each other?
Yeah. Briefly, we spoke.
Well, we went I don't know, some other stream or something. I can't remember. It was like a year ago or something.
Oh, really? It's amazing how smart, white, straight, heterosexual Christian men are.
And Asians too, apparently, right?
Thank you, guys, for coming.
I'm glad that we can all talk about this. I'm glad that you can, you know, have your show. It's a good show. I'm glad that you have your show and stuff like that. So.
And I'm glad you're out there too, man. Aren't you glad he's there?
I like all points of view to be represented.
Well, you're happy he's there.
I think this is a good thing.
I'm not sure. I would have to dig more into his content. I don't know.
I'm happy you're there.
All right.
Thank you all for tuning in. I absolutely appreciate it. Don't forget to like, follow, tweet, subscribe, and share. And we have all types of perks on the Father's Day, so don't forget to support that as well. And thank you, and I love to hear from you about this show. Any show, but especially this one. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. All right. Appreciate it.
Next time on The Fallen State.
The slave master's children, right? They took on a burden.
Lately, they've been taking care of the blacks because they're afraid to be called racist. But and the people, whites who are doing it, are not guilty of black people being in hell the way they are.
Does it hurt your feelings when people call you a coon or sellout?
No,
do you know what a coon is?
Yeah, I have a train, a coon train.
I've seen a coon train, but do you know what that is? Because I was trying to figure out what it was, and I couldn't think of it.
No, I don't know what it is. All I know is I heard the name, right. And I seen the train.
You put two and two together and say, okay.
Must not be good.
Watching The Fallen State. We need your continued support. Donate to my nonprofit here. Subscribe and like the videos here. And tell everybody and their mama about the show.